Right. But I just really dove into listening to the Zappa, which was amazing. It's really, what do you say? It couldn't say an autobiography, an audiobiography, but really it covered a lot of things.
Yes.
What we discussed with Zappa. I mean, he's a brilliant. I mean, you think of the word brilliant when I listen to some, especially that one, the 66 interview was really unbelievable. Unbelievable.
That's right. Let's talk about that. So that's December 22nd, 1966. He's been a band with the Mothers for a year and a half. His album came out in July, Freak Out. And he's now, because of the riots in Sunset Strip, the clubs were kind of closed down, so he had to go to New York to find work. And he got the attention of Hit Parader magazine, the main youth magazine of the day, before Rolling Stone started. You know, 6 months, 8 months later. So he had a major editor there, Don Paulson, interview him, and he seemed to be relatively informed and accepting of what Zappa was attempting. So Zappa spelled out a lot of ideas that he would say over the next 5 or 6, 7 years in fragments, but he said it all on that thing.
Yeah.
Including, yes. What I never heard before was him critiquing the Freak Out album cover, which he didn't like, though, what the company had done to it. And it was considered a pretty revolutionary cover. Everybody liked it. But to hear his particular complaints about it was really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I was amazed. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was amazed where the guy asked about what would be his perfect band. And off the top of his head, he outlined 84-piece orchestra. What would be the perfect Mother's band? That I was like, damn, he pulled that off the top of his head, which showed that he's a genius. He was a genius, musical genius, that he knew all of those different instruments or sound things. I think he said he wanted a lion's roar in that orchestra, which stood out.
It was
out.
Almost like he named every instrument known to Western man.
Yes.
He wanted to have everything in there.
Yes.
And he, I know that list showed up a couple years later in Hit Parade magazine. Maybe it was after he broke up the Mothers and he was talking about some of his plans. And it was a huge paragraph of, you know, it seemed like 100 instruments. So the Hit Parader might have just taken it from that interview. But I'm not sure, or Zappa retyped it. There's a lot of really core ideas in there. For example, he says it's December 22nd, Edgar Varèse is his birthday. Varèse, and he had died a year before, so we know exactly the date. People on the YouTube were asking, when's the date of this? And they were getting mixed up, but it was actually said right there. He at one point said, it's Varèse's birthday. You look it up, December 22nd. And he's talking about a science fiction Broadway musical about Lenny Bruce as an American saint. Well, that never got happened, but it was talked about at Hit Parader magazine through 67, 68, that he was going to do something like that. Maybe even when he broke up the Mothers in 69, he said that was his next project. So it didn't happen right then. But that was interesting to hear him. You know, I know of that sentence, that one sentence where he says, I read it in Hit Parader magazine, where he's going to do a musical on Lenny Bruce. And I knew it didn't happen, but it was amazing to hear him talk about it. And go into some details about Lenny Bruce, who lived near him, and he'd spend, you know, 16, 18 hours a day reading court cases, which many people think totally ruined his career. He shouldn't have done that. But it was interesting that Zappa was impressed with his dedication, his discipline of doing that every day. It showed Zappa's personality. Yeah. That's what he does every day. And so then what else did he say? He's not talking about Garrick Theater, which is going to start in 4 or 5 months later, and he's going to do a six-month run in the theater, and that'll make him famous in New York. I don't think he mentions that. He doesn't know that's going to happen. And he says Edgar Varèse is his hero. He quotes him on Freak Out album. What's the quote? The present-day composer refuses to die. What an ironic statement. Present-day composer refuses to die. Well, and that's what I've been doing. I just spent almost 3 hours composing music, juxtaposition, beautiful composition, all dedicated to the idea we ain't dying. See? Bob, the modern-day composer, refuses to die and plays music to celebrate it. So didn't you find that beautiful, the last hour and so, that
yes,
music?
Yes. You could pull – yeah. What's unique, something you said, is that, something you said when you first started doing the music is that there's so rich – I mean, you don't have to – what did you say? You said you don't have to create any more music. There's so much more music.
Right.
So much music available. And you can just pull it back. And you, how you mix it is like you can go, I mean, way back, and then you can come recently,
yeah,
and you go back a little bit further, back. And it's like you're surfing, and maybe I'm just the mutation of the RNA drops because I enjoy all of it.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. And yeah, I think the drops makes us more sensuous, less critical. And what was another point about that music? Music kind of died in that way. Trained musicians, mm-hmm, doing normal melanin stuff with rap. So when the wall goes down, rap takes off, goes around the world, and rap is something else. It's political. You can say it's partly a figure of the political battle in Washington. It's a political motivated thing. So it's okay, but If the kids don't know about all that happened before, that's pretty sad. If they only know rap or hip-hop, what a missed,
right,
missed ear. And if they don't like it, we play it, they don't like it, boy, what's happened to them? There's an example of media mutating people. You know, they've been mutated into something by their digital lifestyle. If
yeah,
they can't,
hey, Bob,
dig that.
There's one other thing that Zappa had in that 66 that just blew me away that showed his genius is that he outlined how to hypnotize the audience.
Yes.
With music.
Okay. So, what did he say in that particular point?
Okay. I took – because I was funny. I was walking during lunch and listening to it, and when he started outlining it, I stopped and started, like, on my phone clicking. But what the note was, he said the two things that you need to do to hypnotize an audience, the first is sustain volume with certain keys and limit the harmonic movement. Limit the harmonic movement, which I know nothing about. That's something Roxanna would be able to pick up on. But he picked up how you would – and then he went into outlining the harmonic, what goes on with the harmonic, which, you know, I'm not a musician, so I wouldn't understand it. But he really outlined that with some more words,
yes,
as far as what to do with the harmonic. And I was like, man, that guy was a genius. I'd never heard that before.
Now, in Uncle Meat, the booklet in 69, which is two and a half years later, he talks about the scientists using sound to modulate people. He was already thinking that way in 66. And the other interesting thing is this other interview I found, rare interview I never heard before, from 1984, where he – did you hear that one? Where he describes his playing his guitar. Holy shit.
Yeah.
You know, the chords and the notes and the this and the that.
Yeah.
And the up and the down and the over. Holy – I mean, that's that's a talented craftsman there.
Yes.
But he's got the ideas to make him a genius. So what was interesting – he said in 69 in some magazine, Circus magazine, he talked about he didn't believe in the hippie revolution. He said the real revolution is going to come from small towns, little kids with short hair, don't like their older hippie brothers and sisters, and they're going to do something, or he hopes they do something. That's all he said. But here we in this interview, 3 years earlier almost, he said he spells it out. He talks about in every town there's a leader, a cultural hip person, and let's organize them. And then he came up with this genius political media ecology program. He wasn't like McLuhan and saying turn off TV for 6 months.
Right.
He said have the kids not drink Coca-Cola and not buy it for 6 months. They will topple the economy. That was quite a statement, eh?
Yes, it was.
I mean, that's genius. That's not that it would happen, but and he was a smoker and drank coffee. He wasn't a health nut, but he knew what Coca-Cola was, and he knew the audience for it. If they refused to buy it, what would the world do?
Yes.
They refused to drink it. Wouldn't that be a good idea, Carol?
Yeah.
And you know what they would demand? And this is in 66. He said they would demand that they be given the vote at 18. That's all he asked for. So he's talking to this hip freighter guy, who has a bit of power in New York media because he's running the youth magazine. And Frank is all prepared to tell whoever would listen who had access to the media he had his program. And he starts talking about a year later of running his friend Tom Wilson for president. But Zappa was behind that. He'd be an advisor. So he's already talking about taking advantage of the youth situation and politically take over. And Hollywood made a movie about that in 1968, Wild in the Streets, sort of like his enemies in Hollywood said, Frank could pull that off. We better stop it. So we'll smear the whole thing. And they have these kids who take over and kill everybody over 30 and, you know, make it real bad. But Zappa wasn't a radical that way. He was very practical. So you got to hear him complete. He told more details about the kids, the smart kids or the different kids in the towns that are living in a brain-dead environment, but they themselves are available. And he was surprised that his album sold all across the states. And he was thinking it was these kind of kids buying it. And then he found out later that the mafia held a warehouse where a lot of the albums were, and they never distributed them.
Yeah.
So there was that problem. Yeah. And so he talks about the kid quote. And then the he starts talking about his favorite guitar albums. He starts, like, providing a course, what the kids should listen to, the real music. They didn't know what was going on in serious music. They had no clue.
Right.
The little blue-haired ladies ran the local symphonies, and that was all just replaying classics from the 19th century. No awareness of Rez and Stockhausen and all these guys. And he starts saying, I recommend, he names a Wes Montgomery album. So the next thing I said, oh, man, is he going to say Cecil Taylor's Unit Structures? And the next sentence he goes, Cecil Taylor. I was so tuned in. I knew exactly what the other album he would recommend. But he didn't say Unit Structures. And he said that in an interview around that time somewhere else. And I always wondered if he named Moon Unit after the Cecil Taylor album, Unit Structures. That was my theory. I never got that confirmed. I think he came up with other statements. I'm not sure. Dweezil was named after Gail's big toe. So, but I was so aware of Zappa, I say, okay, he's going to list off his album. He's going to mention Cecil Taylor. I hope he says Unit Structures. He doesn't say the album, but he says Cecil Taylor. And then he starts telling, he knows all the different albums that people should buy, the Anton Weber album or Webern,
yeah.
And the Stravinsky albums and the Bartok albums. He lists them all. He makes a whole program. And I assume the kid who was interviewing was writing it down. And then what did he say?
He outlined the three, and I knew of two of the three his favorite guitar players that listened to. I know Johnny Guitar Watson. I listened to his music, and I knew Wes Montgomery. I listened to that when I was trying to play guitar, but I didn't know this guy. What's his name? Clarence Gatemouth Brown.
Oh, Clarence Gatemouth Brown. That's one of those black guys from the Chicago or the 50s and 40s. And those guys, there's a lot of those guys listed on his album, Freakout. He has 179 names on there. And, yes, he's got Wes Montgomery's name on there. And, yeah, Clarence Gatemouth Brown and Johnny Otis, how do you say his name?
Johnny Guitar Watson.
Oh, yeah, Guitar Watson. So who's Johnny Otis is another guy. I think he got his mustache from Johnny Otis. Johnny Guitar Watson didn't have Zappa's mustache, right?
No.
Yes, that was Johnny Otis. And he, what was interesting, he classified the Impressions. Who was there? Little Anthony Imperial in the Impressions? Is that who the Impressions was? Stokely, Smokey Robinson and the Miracles. I think it's Little Anthony Imperial and the Impressions. He called them plastic Motown stuff.
Yeah.
You know, Cheese Whiz stuff. And for me, that was all great music. But we didn't have the ears that Zappa had. Like seven years before that, he's listening to Killin' Gatemouth Brown and all the raw blues and doo-wop. And then he goes into this incredible history of kids making the real folk music of America on the corners. It's a whole thesis he had. I always wondered why he said that there's an old interview in 1969 where he talking about it, the song Electric Aunt Jemima, and it's about him and Beefheart have left a folk club and are on the street corner late at night talking about how they're going to attack the music industry or do something in the music industry, you know, go after it. And I always wondered if it had been connected to them just hearing some local folk music they didn't like. And sure enough, here he says that. He considered the whole Joan Baez, Bob Dylan, early folk world, Pete Seeger, right, as phonies. You know, he said some record executive imposed that on the college kids. But what was really folk music was the doo-wop, the simple black music, which had incredible, you know, weird skills, going on for 10 years before that. Boy, that's Zappa really identifying with the black culture.
Yeah,
with
he,
our
he
culture,
music...
Bert. He's identifying with us.
He was
supporting
a
our political
historian.
Platform.
He reminded me of McLuhan. He reminded me of McLuhan, how McLuhan studied the trivium and the quadrivium and wrote, you know, did his thesis. But Zappa did his music homework. I mean, he was a music historian, and that's how he could see and hear. I mean, he was way beyond all the others to listen to that. I mean, it listened to his interviews. But what was fun for me is to listen to the beginning of the 1966, where he started talking about how he motivated the mothers. Like he said, we're gonna be rich playing the music, and
right.
How he was trying to convince the guys. And then one thing is, they started their first gig. People used to come to see him just abuse the audience, not their music.
Right. So he's playing out in Orange County at the Broadside, where Leslie Rewerts, one of our aunts, who's the mother of Augie, who just got married, she witnessed Zappa in that period in high school at the Broadside. So they're out in the conservative boondocks, and Zappa's got all this culture in him, black culture that nobody knows or no white people know it. And he's trying to get these guys, and they were good musicians. They were doo-wop guys. Roy Estrada and Jim Carl Black and Ray Collins were all incredible R&B musicians. He got the right guys, and he's playing in the sticks, and the people don't like his music. They want to hear Louie Louie and Wooly Bully and all the radio stuff. And he said they couldn't have survived. They couldn't have survived playing Zappa's music. And he had convinced them, look, if you play my music, we're going to be famous. Well, he said they starved for 10 months. And they didn't know if they'd ever get the next gig. So, being sub-geniuses, they took the latest gig they were doing and took advantage of the stupidity what he thought of the audience. And he would insult the audience. He told them to fuck himself. Because he assumed it would be his last concert, last gig. But everybody, so he was the first punk. So what happened is it got rumored real fast. Hey, these crazy guys, these old Mexican-looking guys, because they all were way older than the kids, and they looked Mexican. Well, you know, Roy was Mexican. Jim was an American Indian, and Zappa was an Italian mafia guy. So it spread quickly that, hey, let's go see these guys. We'll get insulted. So he became famous for that. And it brought me back about that's what we remembered. I remember that's what you heard about Zappa, that he turned his back on the audience. He refused to play. Well, he got more like that in 67 at the Garrick Theater when they had an audience. But at first, it was pretty tenuous. You know, like they're really risky. And they just kept playing their music. And then he got arrested in there. We have to get the timing. He's arrested in March 65. I think he's formed the band by then or joined the band. So it's not clear how that interrupts him. But he spends 10 days in jail, and then he gets the hell out of Cucamonga and goes to L.A. And he gets in that little house that we have video of on my timeline. So he then reconnects with those guys or really gets them going, and he joins them. That's what's not clear. I'd have to look at a really good biography timeline. So he's in L.A., and now the world is changing in L.A. because the Byrds are playing Dylan's music in 65, Tambourine Man. They got a hit. Dylan goes out and hangs out there. And Sonny and Cher, they did one of his songs. And they all become famous, and then there's Arthur Lee and Love, that band, which is really good, and the Byrds, and the Crazy Dancers, Vito, who he mentions, I think he mentions them, Vito, he says they're a cult. But they're doing this, they're the first to do wild hippie dancing or freak dancing, And so people started coming to see the Byrds and Zappa and whoever else Vito and them showed up to see the dancers. So that got the attention in L.A., not the insulting, though Zappa would do a little bit of that about that. So he never got going on his music in the first couple of years. It was other reasons that he got attention. But then Tom Wilson, you know, the genius black Harvard graduate, I think, black producer, found them and said, "Oh, our record label, we need an our what do they call it, folk rock band." So they signed him up. And right around that time, Zappa gets into a Hagstrom guitar commercial in a magazine. It might have been a year or so later, and it's Zappa, you know, advertising the Hagstrom guitar, but the logo says, "Folk rock is a drag." He's sticking it right to the fad of the day. I mean, it's really interesting to track what he was doing. He's on a suicidal trip the whole time. But it worked. His musical brilliance, he had top guitarists coming through him like Canned Heat's Henry Vestine. He had Elliot Ingber. He had this woman, Alice Stewart, who was a fantastic blues player, but couldn't play Louie Louie, just couldn't do simple music. So she had to be removed. But he was really the head of the scene always as soon as he showed up in L.A., And at the same time, he's writing serious music. And just, you know, 3 months after that interview, he is recording Lumpy Gravy with a big orchestra. Early 67. See, the guy was way beyond a genius. The guy was an alien. You know what I mean? He was an implant, a Bob probe. And he talks just like McLuhan. You're exactly right. I was thinking about that. He's talking about the effects of the medium he knows. McLuhan's an expert on the effects of books and poetry and literature, and then he extrapolates it into the media. And he does a bigger level. But Zappa is talking effects. He's also, just like McLuhan, educating people to an alternative culture, alternative history of the really good stuff in classical serious music and in pop music with the R&B world. He's really doing McLuhan as a junior guy, a junior version doing McLuhan.
Yeah.
Right?
You know what? I mean, another thing, I dealt with musicians early in the 2000 where I was a tour manager, and I hung around with them and watched them rehearse and things, and it reminded me of being a professional athlete. But then he outlined something. I'm like, holy shit, that's it. He said that band, what was it, the 84 band, they knew 65 songs, which is a total of three shows. And each night he would outline the songs. They were so rare. I'm like, fuck, that's like football. That's like you do all these plans or all these plays and stuff, and then the coach just calls it and you just play it. Do it. Right.
Off the top. That's what Zappa did.
Those guys had to be disciplined. That man. 65
songs. That was the 84 songs. Tour, and he said the 80 tour band, the 82 band 85. Knew 85. Yeah. 85 songs.
Shit, man. That's unbelievable. Unbelievable. I tried to just run that in my head. I'm like, man, those guys really were disciplined to do that. And then they changed the words in the songs to match what happened the previous day, to put it in the song. Laughing, I'm like, man, that's insane, but it's fun. I mean, that's a lot.
Yeah,
of
he was using the music to be the news, and years later he had the opportunity to do a news show at night, like Tonight's Show, and he was going to be that kind of making skits on the news of the day. And somehow it didn't get accepted. So who replaced him? Who's the black guy with the smooth face who comes in the late 80s? The short crew cut guy, famous Richie somebody or something. Anyways, that guy, he replaced Frank. That's how his career happened, because they wouldn't allow Frank to do this nightly TV show. And they put in, you know that guy? Nice, handsome, thin guy, late 80s, early 90s. He was famous for a while. That's it. Yeah. And later, Arsenio Hall, I think, interviews Zappa, and they talk about that beginning.
Yes.
the origins. So so Zappa was ready to do the news, to play off the word that makes the market, like McLuhan did. He was going to do it in what he was doing in whatever medium he had, which was music for a while, and then he had the opportunity to do TV. So let's see. What else did he say? So he talked about the kids, the black folk culture was a real folk culture, the classical records, the new modern music to listen to that the kids knew nothing about, his big plan with 84 instruments, and how he changed America through Coca-Cola, and what else? Did he also put down everybody's parents? Said the parents are a bunch of lazy jerks, you know.
Yeah, he said something like about the parents. He said something about the parents didn't know anything or something like that.
Right.
He said that something. He made some type of comment. I believe it was
very.
The parents
he said they're very irresponsible. They're very irresponsible. He said, you know, yeah. And he was being the ultimate responsible parent, an older brother to everybody, with the goods, just like me. And he was sincerely laying it out. He was really the best high school teacher. He considered all of America high school. He was the best high school teacher trying to fix the school up, and had very good, rational understandings of what the deal was that he was up against. And
yeah.
Let's see. What else did he talk about?
But his it's funny to hear him talk about he wanted to be a chemist, but then after blowing himself up a few times, he said, hey, maybe I should get a record player. I think how he convinced his parents to buy him a record player.
And then they played Little Doggy in the Window music. He couldn't. I know in other interviews he doesn't say it there, but he's not allowed, or maybe he did, but he's not allowed to play his music in the house, so he has to do it in his bedroom.
Right.
You know, the door is shut, and when his mother's not using the record player, play her simple music. The another thing he had in there was he describes the album cover for the second album, Absolutely Free. See, when I was not with Frank when the album Freak Out came out, and then Absolutely Free came out. And I said, oh, look at that. Look at these. So to hear him describe what he actually thought of the album, the first one, and naming particular parts of the photographs on the first album, which I hadn't heard before, was pretty good. And then him describe the making of Absolutely Free, which I know exactly what the cover is, and him describing it. That's incredible for us historians to hear him describing an album that was really, really stood out as an album cover. And he had taken over. He said, I'm not going to have the company make the album. They do a bad job. So he was describing the way he drew it and all that, the way he collaged it. So that was really amazing. And so he did the album
covers.
He's so
business savvy. He had really a business mind. He was very strategic.
Do you remember what he said?
Marketing.
Okay, do you know the next sentence you should say to illustrate what he did with businessmen?
No.
Where is Carolyn? Oh, there she is. I saw that door was shut. Okay, so you know what he said? Carolyn hasn't heard it. He said, businessmen hate music. club owners hate
right.
music. They just want you in there to drink the booze and make money. They don't give a fuck about the music, and they hate most of it. So Frank says Frank would go to the clubs and the concert promoters and tell him how much he hated the music. He hated music.
Yeah, that's right.
And he would do NLP on the club owner because he knew once he was playing, and he said they knew they would get kicked out because we would eventually have to insult the club owner. So, you know, it was tenuous when he was insulting people. But once he got in there and they wondered whether to let him in to play, he couldn't tell them what he was going to play. The complex music. Mm-hmm. So he just said, I hate music. And he was being true. He says, I hate the shit that the people are consuming through top radio. He even, on the cover of Absolutely Free, there's a big logo and it says, Kill Ugly Radio. He is actually saying that he is going to kill top 40 radio within 6 months.
Yeah.
Because he talks about He says, I predict that we will become the leadership of the youth music scene. We'll be the guide, he said, the high school teacher, the expert. So he had this incredible revolution going on. He was being a Mao Zedong in a modern McLuhan way. You do it through the TV studio and the radio stations. So he said, I would tell the mafia guys who ran the clubs that I hated music too, and they don't like him, and let him perform.
Yeah.
And then I don't know what they thought of the music, but they didn't care. They said, oh, Frank's just doing bad music because he hates music. I like Frank's music because he's honest about making stew. He's honest. He makes crappy music and encourages people to drink. So that was incredible. Were you going to say that, Bert? Did you remember that part?
Yes, I forgot about that, but yes, that was fun. He hated radio. He said radio, people have no idea. What did he say? The people have no idea what's going behind the scenes at the radio stations.
Right.
Or people have no idea about what's going behind the scenes in the music industry. No
and McLuhan, in that adopt a college. No, it was someone. It was a quote. Oh, the Ralph Nader quote. 1975, that McLuhan's daughter screwed up in the book and left the page out. He said Ralph Nader was a model for high school and college students to investigate their environments, the institutions that they live in the cities. Go out there and investigate them. Zappa would have led and was doing exactly McLuhan's program for the music industry. He wanted the kids to investigate the radio stations and find out what crap and payola and bullshit was going on in their entertainment world. Now, the McLuhan point was, sorry, Frank, the medium is the message. The kids don't care where the music came from. They're all stoned on the fucking music. It's such great music. They're all in ecstasy, like I had for the Dobbs Quadrant, right? So they can't focus on a revolution, right? They just riot in the streets. But Frank was saying that psychologically, the next generation of kids will be a little more used to TV and that. And they won't be so hypnotized by all this stuff. And they'll be able to think for a few minutes and organize the Coke ecology strike, Coca-Cola strike. And there's another quote that Zappa said around then. In 50 years, the kids will understand TV. He said, this is such a powerful environment. It's going to fool people for 50 fucking years. That's a McLuhan awareness understanding.
Yes.
And he had worked in advertising. You know, he had known how they manipulate advertising. So what an incredible teacher. And that interview is not known. Nobody knows he said that. You get little fragments if you watch them closely, like I did in interviews or talk to him. But nobody in general knew he was talking like that. And that Don Paulson, he must have found that interview or something recently and just released it. So there's another important point. What are you looking at, Carol?
There's something about your breath. I'm hearing you inhale.
So what? Jesus Christ. You're like the club owners, Bob. Just
play me. Care what you say,
Bob. Yeah, I don't care what you say, Bob. Just breathe properly. If you're
going to
talk, Bob, breathe properly.
Stop breathing, Bob.
Yeah. Fucking shit. It's all around us. Us Zappa fanatics just don't get nowheres.
It's like in the publishing industry, the publishers hate authors. In medicine, the doctors hate patients.
And the nurses hate doctors. Everybody hates everybody. It's awful stupid. I am the most loved person because I don't interact with anybody. Nobody sees me. They can't start finding out what an asshole I am in a daily functioning work office environment, right, where everybody's an asshole eventually. So then there was a very important point. There's nine parts to that 1966 interview. So part one has some commentary. I didn't notice much commentary in the following eight parts. But in the first one, someone writes in and says, and it seems it's been around for 4 years, this interview, available, says, you know, Frank starts saying man a lot. Says, I've never heard Frank doing popular, slangy, juvenile kind of phrases, like you never hear Frank go, hey man, how's it going, right? Or the man stuff that everybody of the boomer generation at that age would be saying, hey man. And Zappa is unmistakably saying, man this, and man, like saying to Paulson, you know, and man, you know, we could do this, and man, those kids could do that. So you know what? I typed my first post on YouTube, Carolyn. Like, this guy, he said, he's writing how odd it is that Zappa was talking teen style or being tribal and saying the rhythms of his generation, which he usually never did because he was so articulate, right? He talked technically most of the time. So I could look it up. But if you look it up, Bert, you can see one of nine what I wrote. But it's the first time I ever post on YouTube because Ed showed me how to do it a week ago, or how to make it register because I could never register properly.
Oh, that was painful. I had to leave the house.
When I was doing that?
Oh,
right. You mean with Ed?
When I was learning from Ed.
Yeah.
I hope you paid him well.
Well, no, the point is that it never works. Even Ed couldn't figure it out. It's always crazy with my computer. It just doesn't follow.
No, it's you.
Oh, yeah, me from another world.
Hey, it's you.
Yeah, it's not, my vibe just fucks up the Android meme, and they don't know how to respond to my clicks. So anyways, what I said is, and I experienced this, if you're talking to Frank and eventually you kind of show that you like what he's talking about, you're a bit knowledgeable and you're interested in it, especially like Don Paulson does. He knew a little bit about electronic music, and he knew R&B stuff. And so Frank, who is what? He's 26 about there. And, yeah, it's the day after his 26th birthday, December 22nd. His birthday is December 21st. Huh. 66, he's born in 40, so he just turned 26. So he's now in his 27th year. And so he's going to start talking like himself 10 years before. And when he's 17, hanging out with B-Fart, and they're memorizing the statistics of the old blues albums, blues records, who made them, who produced it, and all that stuff. Like Greg Duffel does, memorizes who produces the cartoons, right?
Right.
And who were the writers, and when he did as a kid. So there's Frank. Because this guy was simpatico, and Frank he'd be less on his guard. He'd always be on his guard because he had a whole agenda. But when he relaxed, he loved talking about this stuff, which were plans and goals he had since he was a teenager almost. He became a teenager again, and he would start talking like a teenager. That's why he started saying, man, and what about this, man, that, That's what he was doing.
Yeah.
He fell back into his teen self.
Programming.
So he never grew up. He became an adult without losing his youthful self, and he could become the youthful self. And it shocked the guy hearing that. He didn't understand that part about Frank.
Huh.
That he was actually a little kid, Harry Potter in the world up against the dark forces of magic ever since he was a teenager. And Carolyn, because she hasn't finished the Bobby Zappa book, read 80 pages last night because it's been sitting on the couch here for a year. And
I had a gun at my head.
Yeah, you fucking are like sitting there gathering dust. A Zappa book is gaining dust.
Oh.
And, Bobby Zappa is not that great of a writer, so it's very hard for Carolyn to read.
Yeah.
But you did about 80 pages last night because he writes about three lines a page.
Mm-hmm.
And Carolyn started to get outraged at the horrible father Frank had, mm-hmm. and she started to have sympathy for the teenage Frank.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that's who I'm talking about. The one who went, man, and this, man, we could do that. So that's an important point, Bert, which you did not know anything about and had no desire to articulate because you did not read the comments in the YouTube. Did you?
Well,
you were too flabbergasted.
Actually, I'm doing it from the iPhone and they don't show the comments. So I have.
Oh, okay. You have an alibi.
Yeah.
Right, so you missed that. So you.
I'll check it out later.
Yeah, check it out. I should post it, what I said. Anyways, so there's that point. What else did he say about that period? They closed the Andy Warhol, the trip. That's a line you heard him say through the next couple of years. We were the last band in the trip. Warhol's the. No. The Electric Circus, whatever the club was that Warhol ran in New York City or owned or, provided the content for, they did the last show, maybe with Lou Reed and the Velvet Underground. So we closed it or shut it down. That line he has said different places. You hear him actually say it in the interview. So there were themes in that interview where you heard the actual audio of stuff you read about. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what was so great for me.
I remember.
To hear the audio.
I posted on Facebook about what he said about psychedelic. He says psychedelic music is bullshit. You take, you know, a nine-piece band, don't direct them, and then you have psychedelic music or something like that.
That's right. Like they're all stoned. They don't have any discipline, but they just want to improvise and act free. And John Lennon would told McLuhan in December 69 that, you know, we need to have freedom for the next 500 years. So that's psychedelic. You know, let everybody play a little bit, you know, more undisciplined than music was up to that point. But Zappa maintained a balance, both hemispheres of the brain. He kept the discipline plus the improvising parts.
Yes.
He was in the corpus callosum. And that's why he so stands out. The Evergreens' prediction that the era will be called the Zappa era is so appropriate, it's so accurate, right? Even though your parents,
yes,
Bert, never heard of Zappa, Ginny's parents never heard of Zappa, Ginny never heard of Zappa until I showed up. You know, the point is that the greatest guy, and he proves it as we get more and more information about him, he is the ground of the musical world as a virtual music. He's part of the Android meme. The Android meme starts in 1960, so he, McLuhan, everybody on my chart, are propped up by the Android meme for satisfying the decentralized consciousness that was happening, but centralizing what's going on secretly. So,
Bob, your update of your chart, I listened to that interview. That was like very scientific interview. I was like, holy, this is, I mean, I have like a large, I was able to, when I was able free at work, I printed out a very large sheet of your chart. And then through the years of Ion updated, I had hand notes. But now I've got to figure out a way to put that update in there, because that is unbelievable, that interview of how you outline, how we covered all the quadrants of your chart. That's
right. Now, what's hard? You can just write them in your chart. What's the problem?
Well, I have to print it out. I mean, I have to print out another. I already have updates that I already have.
Oh, it's no room.
No room.
Right. Yeah. No, that. So I discovered that, you know, a week or two ago. Then I discovered the 66 thing, which we're just talking about. Then the 84 thing. But if you go to the 66 thing, and there's another interview around early 67 in Detroit where he talks about, just like McLuhan, the marketing to different kinds of audiences. Very savvy what he's saying. That other interview is quite revealing. When I heard that, I told Jerry Fiocchi, I told you he was a McLuhanite. That's what I told Jerry. That was a year or two ago. So you take that one, that's good. Then you take the 66 one we're just talking about. Then you take the 1984 one, Carolyn. You wouldn't believe it. You wouldn't understand one sentence. But the guy describes how he plays his guitar and why he's not going to play repeated greatest hits, or why he's not going to memorize anything. And he says, he had said in another interview, I know I have a good skill with this guitar. I can compose every night on it. But him, he described the chords and the notes and the this and the that. It was unbelievable what he said in the 84 interview,
yes.
Right?
Yes, yes.
I mean, it's totally incorrect. I would like to know how to do that or understand it. Got to get a musician or somebody to teach me that someday. But it was quite astounding. And it sounded like a lot of figure ground stuff he was talking about. You know, the
very
notes
scientific.
Are figures and the chords are ground.
Very scientific. I never heard a modern musician talk that way he did as far as what he was doing. It was like, wow. Very scientific.
Yeah, like his,
very scientific.
Yeah. So that's why the Evergreens said there is a philosophy in Zappa. He's a philosopher or slash scientist, though people don't know it. But I've been tracking it. So when I found that Pifiacto documentary, which I saw a few years ago but didn't notice something, probably because I hadn't had enough RNA drops or Remag. But now I'm a genius because of the products I'm on. And I heard that, and I said, holy shit, it's four parts plus maybe a fifth part a little later, and it's each quadrant, and he's describing what you see little glimpses of on album covers and little interviews. He says it all right there in that three-minute thing. The fact that waveforms, which is how he begins the Bob Marshall, Dobbs, Connie Dobbs, Jerry Fiocchi interview in October 1988, when I go, what is music? And he starts talking about rates and frequencies and waves. It's right there in that interview. Mm-hmm. And so he begins with that. He calls it waveforms. Then he says you must look at melodies as a word, right? That's McLuhan's point about all media, all technologies are, in essence, words. And then he says you take that flat waveform and make it perpendicular, which Ian has talked about doing that, and you look through it like a slinky, and it's in a harmonic climate. Harmonic climate.
You know,
who
Bob,
knew, Carol?
Bob, it reminds
now,
me. Go ahead.
Hey, well, hold up, Bert. The harmonic climate is said in his Whatever Happened to Mothers. When they broke up, he wrote an article with Hit Parader. And he mentions the harmonic climate. And I read that in 69 or 70. He said, well, look at that, harmonic climate. I don't know how deeply I looked into it, if I thought it was medium. But here it is. 40 years later, he uses it in that context. And then he talks about not specializing in any one technique. You know, you have the sampler, the synthesizer, or the live musician, rocker, orchestra. He's quadraphenic in his all use all media. And then he talks about the physiological effect of media, which is in the liner notes of Uncle Meat, and about how scientists are using sound for military purposes. So all of that, Bert, you don't realize that I've been thinking about those parts for 30, 40 years and never heard him say it all at once. I mean, that's the biggest found information in my life, probably, next to Ion.
Yep.
That's the biggest clue, and I kept reading the interviews and keeping up on them to find out when what I was looking for, and I must have known I was going to find it, when he would say it. And he said it. And, you know, ALP, Analivi Plurbo, goes, holy shit, Bob, this is awesome. UN is awesome. Anybody's really smart. It is quite a discovery. Roxy thought it was she goes, re-wow. Now, what were you going to say, Bert, if I haven't knocked it out of your memory?
No, you haven't, because it reminded – I wanted to – it was when I got off the show, like on the – what is it? 3 weeks ago, when you played the Extreme Science, and Ion outline about the speed of sound, something
right.
about it replaced Coldplay, and I was like, holy. And then I hear this thing about Zappa talking about sound, like this whole thing – what did he say? That the Ion said that – the speed of sound with the Mach 3, that if you put a tuning fork in it and capture that frequency, it would replace Coldplay. Now,
yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
What is that? What in the world is that? But that sound, the sound, which you just said that you've been thinking about, it's sound.
Yeah.
There's something.
Well, Zappa, that's where Zappa is, and pre-ionic philosophers, like all the people on the Android Mean chart are, McLuhan, they're thinking out what's happening. As a matter of fact, I think McLuhan would say, the artist talking, or maybe Ion would say, the artist and scientist talking, the artist talking about stuff 100 years before the technology shows up, the effects preceding the causes. It's their talking and their ideas that creates the envelope to have the technology be manifested. So Zappa is talking ionic technologies.
Yes.
In his musical concept. That's what's amazing.
Yesterday,
do you realize how lucky I am, Bert, to actually find that quote? I mean, it was all just laid out there. How perfect could you get? And nobody knew it. And for the first time, I posted my commentary, like I made a little commentary last week on What Youth, which I'm repeating here a bit. But I posted with the chart and Zappa and the six quadrants. We can even put the hexadic in. And it's the first time ever that I posted on a Zappa Facebook page and people responded. You got people from Portugal,
really?
Africa. They're all going, oh, fuck, I like this. There's a whole Zappa ground out there, Zappa fans, that are interested in what I'm presenting.
Wow.
So that's quite an achievement. Like, they just keep streaming in. You know how on your Facebook page it shows you people, it tells you people commenting on your thread? Well, all these, I showed Carolyn, like, we're reading off these names. They're very strange, these foreign names that are Zappa fans. You know, hardly pronounceable. But they're all saying, hey, I like this. This is good. It's like the little kids in every town. The little smart kid in every town pops up when you put the good stuff out. You never see them posting on the trivial level.
I'll take more of this. I'll take all these other
Yeah, Dave Letterman. I'll take all you got. Now, when will this get to Ben Watson? Who, you know, generally thinks my view is a doofus. What's he going to do when this fucking shows up? The only thing
Facebook,
he ever said,
you know,
was...
Is he on
Yeah,
Facebook,
he has his own Facebook page. But he stays in his own bubble, his own Marxist musical bubble. And he just promotes his... He's a DJ, too. You know, we're competing same time. But he once said that... The Zappa stuff about scientists using sound for military operations, he says, oh, that's just Zappa, you know, putting it on, making a joke. No, we hear Frank say the music can affect people physiologically.
Yes.
Okay, your next thought.
I had something to say, but I forgot it, Bob.
Well, your appreciation for the immensity of what he said and how to match it to the chart is incredible.
Yes.
Because Zappa is the ground of the chart. It's Anachronist Bob's tiny note. It's all Zappa-related ideas. And it's the grand wazoo of the decade dance, or the decade. And I'm reading this book, very important book by Vincent Sherry, Modernism and the Reinvention of Decadence, right now. And that's in my title of the chart, Decad Dance, or pun on decadence. So I didn't have any more materials to reinforce that Zappa is the ground of the chart. Getting to subcellular frequencies that Zappa says is in, that Ion says is in matter, right? Which would get to the Coldplay, a musical invention. Frequency thing, soundscape that creates a more powerful energy source than cold fusion. But
I
knew you'd I'd evoke it.
I just remember because I'm always douse like, okay, what do I want to hear today with Ion? And I always go, and the more I go back to that electricity thing that John did with Ion, the more I listen to it, the more I understand it. But the one thing that picked out for me yesterday is that what Ion does with words, how he they play, they use the words because, you know, we're literate, we understand the words, but how they put the words together and throw them at you can be overwhelming because it's not the way that you would normally think literally. I mean, they do something with words and they throw it at you and it just like boggles your mind because the words are coming at you not in the sentence structure that you've read or you've been oriented, and it just like I'm starting to understand that about what they explain about electricity, and it's like, holy shit, this is amazing. But they really just, they like take words and throw them at you like you've never heard them before,
right?
And it just
now here's
throws your mind
here's
off.
The resonance. Yeah, Dave Wirth used to say, if he looked at the cosmic awareness that he channeled in the late 60s, he said you could break it apart into iambic pentameter. So that was a pretty big deal. Shakespeare wrote an iambic pentameter. So he would project iambic pentameter into the trance sessions that when they were transcribed. So I always remembered that. But I knew pretty quick on that there's nothing more eloquent than Ion, and you got to be a damn fucking fool not to be impressed. And he is the ultimate poet, the Allen Ginsberg, the T.S. He is the poet of our time. He does the most amazing, beautiful eloquence in what he does. That's what you're talking about, or you should be saying that. That's what you mean.
That's what I mean, exactly, because the word.
We've got a modern Shakespeare, a modern genius expressing reality and science formulas in poetry or in some kind of harmonic resonance, what Zappa's trying to do in his music.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree totally that it is the most beautiful expression. So here, you know, try to get an English professor to fucking understand that. They won't. They'll just say, I hear a southern accent, and he's obviously making shit up, and he's playing with your mind, you know.